Welcome, everybody, to Season 3, Episode 2 of That Round It podcast. I am very happy to introduce and announce the guest for Episode 2, which is the one and only Ben Dantowitz. Welcome to the show. Welcome to the episode, Ben.
Thanks, Scott. It's good to be here. I know it's been maybe a little bit of time that I was trying to get my time in the sun here on TRP.
Time in the sun. I don't know. It depends subjectively if people believe it's the sun or not. But I'm happy to have you here. I have so many things I want to discuss with you that we've been saving for this episode. I want to get into it. But before we get into some of those topics, I really do want to ask some questions about you, Ben. I personally don't think, this is not a criticism. I personally don't think you do a well enough job to portray yourself and what you're doing and your intentions with RoundNet. I think you do a huge amount. And for those that don't know, I mean, I'm going to just name some of the things that you're doing, but you know, you're part of the USAR board. You were helping run and running the Round Network. I believe you're helping with East Round Nets. You're also helping, or previously have helped massively with observers. I don't know your full role and responsibilities or help within that right now. You're running the Discord, helping run the Discord server that's based in the US primarily for people to have discussions and keep organized within the sport. I'm probably missing a few because that's how many things you're doing, but please entertain that intro and some of the things you are doing and then things I missed out.
Yeah, I'll say I always am picking up ad hoc projects. I think the only two things that I have to mention because I worked on them today is the Greater Washington RoundNet community. That's like my local club. And we've got like a local club that we've started this year, like more formally trying to model off of, you know, the strong EU community. And I'm also volunteering, not on observing or officiating, but I'm volunteering with the IRF to help brush up some rules things because rules are very confusing. I can try to speak to the question in two parts. First is a very weird thing is I don't have a personal Instagram and I'm not really an online person. And what's really challenging as I've navigated going through RoundNet and enjoying a lot of the stuff I do and exploring my curiosities is it's never really about me. It's always like, what's a fun thing that I could do that I can enjoy and maybe share the story and the community with other people. But my personal life is not online. Don't really post I have a Ben Rounded account if you want to follow it. I have not posted on it and I don't plan to post on it anytime soon. But at the same time, my passion for Rounded is really big. And like you mentioned, all the things I'm touching on, it's very busy sometimes and they don't all happen at the same time, thank goodness. But when I've started doing any of them and when I've continued doing any of them, it comes down to what does the sport need, you know, in a small way? And can I offer it? Can I work on it? Can I support it? And then if I can continue to support and grow the sport in that way, then I keep doing it.
But yeah, before we go sort of further into that detail, I sort of want to like give more of a background of yourself, Ben, because we're going to talk about sort of the incentive,
sure,
why the things you do. But like, you know, what do you do on a personal basis, you know, day to day? And how do you balance that mixture of these projects on the side and passion for RoundNet while living your life? Because yeah, it's voluntary and you're doing a lot of other things. So yeah.
It's a good question. So yeah, and on like the non-RoundNet side, I guess a non-RoundNet question.
Yeah.
I studied data science and economics in university, and out of school I went into the consulting world. I'm in DC, so it's generally like doing federal consulting, supporting governments, projects. And I've done a lot of that in the last 5-ish years. I took a little break, worked on a different job, doing more like business analytics work. And I'm now back doing federal consulting again, all DC based. Mm-hmm. One thing I'll definitely highlight that I want to, you know, share more about, of course, is I think over the past roughly 18 to 20 months, about 10-ish of those months have been spent on some sort of sabbatical, personal sabbatical, not working full time. And the reason I did that was a combination of where I wanted to take my own career and the timing of some really exciting RoundNet projects that I was working on. So from May 2023 through February 2024, I was fortunate enough to be able to work pro bono basically on all the RoundNet projects I've worked on. Of course, it would be amazing if I was working full-time salaried. People always ask me, do you work full-time in Roundon? And I say, depends what you mean by full-time.
Time-wise,
it's illegal. But yeah, that's what I do personally. And of course, I mean, I have lots of other passions outside of just Roundnet. I originally came from like playing Ultimate Frisbee. So lots of other, I feel like all the Roundnet people, they love some sort of sports games. I used to play football just like you do now still. I bang my head too many times. So, you know, a little more personal. You're welcome to go deeper there. I know that's not what most people are here for, but I appreciate the chance to talk about myself.
Personally, I don't care if people, a lot of people aren't here for it. I think we don't value enough and get to understand in the community enough of these people who are doing so much for it. I think we value top players, and we'll get onto this maybe a little bit later as well. We value top players and the serves they're hitting. This isn't doing anything to contribute to the sport. They're raising the amount of levels to get to that elite level, but it's the people who are like you, who are doing like things outside the scene for the community and for the sport. Without you, these top players don't even have an event to go to, let alone prize money that they complain about. You know, what I like to put it into reference when I talk about a lot of people is you are giving, giving, giving. Some people are choosing to take, and you have that in all sports. However, if we have the majority that are just taking, 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 then there's going to be nothing left to give. Very simple metaphor, very simple analogy, but it's very true. And it's for a niche sport, it's even more so true. So I do ask these questions about you because I actually once asked this question in particular to you, Ben, because I think it's very unique to the person. I think we diddle and dally around the true incentives of people. And as a marketing major, as a marketing guy, you know, I very like to know what are people's true incentives, you know, from a psychological standpoint.
Sure.
True incentives. Because if people's true incentives are not about what they say they are, then it's like, for me, I just lose a little bit of trust or hope in them. But some people may not even know their true intentions because people don't know their meaning of life. That's fine too. I'm not trying to get really...
I've got a lot to say to that, yeah.
but what I will say is that, Ben, you do so much and you dedicate so many hours. What is it for you that motivates you to put in all the hours? I know Roundnet is your passion, but why is Roundnet your passion? What do you love about Roundnet that makes you feel you want to dedicate so much of your energy and life to it?
Well, first, I just want to earmark, you can go look up a book summary of the book Give and Take by Adam Grant. It pretty much summarizes a little bit of what Scott's getting here with givers and takers. For myself, something very interesting, and there's been years and years of introspection for me on what I want out of Roundnet. Just to lay out, for me, when I first started, it was a hobby, and then it became a passion, and all of a sudden, I let my curiosity flow, and all of a sudden, I've got myself working on side projects, and now it's a part-time job is, I guess, the fairest way to describe it, in that I do make a little bit of money for all the hard work I do on some of the things that I'm not volunteering for. But as far as what I want from Roundnet, I think is probably most easily encapsulated by one of the first things I took on was starting a club at my university, where I started playing Roundnet in the summer of 2015. I went back to school and I said, I had a really fun time playing Roundnet this summer. I really want to play with people here. Selfishly, I'm going to start a club so that I can teach people how to play, so that I can play with people while I'm in Rochester, which now has two really good university clubs there. But at the time, was 3.5 hours from anybody that knew what a tournament was for Roundnet. So this was in 2015, the fall of 2015. So started the club then and, you know, followed that definitely selfishly. And, you know, over time there become opportunities to serve, you know, publicly. And I think to get your question answered more succinctly, I would say it would be amazing if I could just do all the stuff I do for Roundnet and got paid a salary that was livable. Not like amazing. I don't really care for having like that many material things. That'd be awesome. I think the challenge that I struggle with day in and day out, but maybe like month to month, is prioritizing myself and paying myself versus prioritizing other things that are good for the sport. And I know you mentioned it's really valuable to have people that are contributing to the sport, so you need these people to stay around. But I also don't think that the decision-making is solely my own to say, I'm going to prioritize myself above everybody else and just pay myself first. And I have the luxury of being able to do that given the background of my career and me wanting to, yes, have a good time working on Roundnet things. But at the end of the day, like, I don't think I'll ever really recoup all the energy and time I put into it. And that's not the point. I've gotten a lot of joy and community and connections out of it. And also, like I didn't mention, I guess I'm not really an active player, but I've had some cool plays also through the years that I relish too, the same way anybody relishes a cool plan and a memory that you get to make with your friends around you. So I've already gotten a lot out of RoundNet to answer your question. And if I can get more out of it, great. But I'm really trying to create opportunities for more people to have the experiences that I've had.
Yep. Yeah.
And if I could be paid, I'll take it.
How was it? That last summary was it. That's exactly what I expected you to say before this podcast. How can you create more opportunities for other people to have the experience that you've had, because the experience you had, and I resonate with this obviously, but talking specifically about you and giving people that other experience is crazy. It's so amazing because there's not many other sports that can give you that same experience. And that's where it sort of comes down to, I think, when people realize that and want to give that to other people, that's where you get most people who are these givers in the community, because they want other people to experience the same thing they had.
I would love to just quickly plug, if you know a tournament director, there's lots of struggles, but ask them about like how good it felt when someone told them that they had a great time at the event they ran, or any other situation where you might have been giving to someone else, because that's probably what's keeping them doing those things.
Mm-hmm. No, I totally agree. No, it's a very well put, very refreshing to hear. I would just add that I'm really trying to somewhat break the ice. I don't know the best way to phrase this, Ben. I'll be totally honest with you. But when a lot of the content I listen to you and consume of yours, and I've listened to a lot of your podcasts on YouTube, adds to the list of stuff I didn't mention earlier that you do. Or the conversations you have with people, and you speak very well, very concisely, very clear, quite, to me, as also someone who does podcasting, very inspirational, because it's very hard to concise all your words, especially when you speak so many words in a day on so many different platforms. And so it's very impressive. And although if you have such clarity and conciseness with all your words, you maybe lose that slight element. And of course, you're talking about, you know, you're consulting in the federal world of, you know, law and government, then it's understandable that is the way you speak, because you have to be very clear and concise with your work you do in that. Do you ever feel, just again, I'm just talking personally here, do you ever feel that you wish you could be a little bit more personable? And I really don't mean that in a bad way at all. I just mean that because you are so concise and clear with your words, that it maybe doesn't get Ben across. Because I sometimes just want, I love what things you're talking about. I want more Ben to come across rather than just, you know, it being very clear and concise. I'm just thinking, just putting it out there.
I appreciate what I think is a compliment, that you'd love to hear more me in the things. I'd say an ongoing struggle with both anxiety and also me thinking probably five levels above where I need to be about trying to like genericize everything I say, because I don't think what I'm saying matters because I say it. When I'm talking about, especially RoundNet, I'm not trying to tell people what to think. I'm trying to help them with how they think about it and just share my experience. I feel like that's something that I'm able to offer with just like a long time horizon on so many different experiences, but also like seeing a lot of seasons of things. And I think this actually might speak to why maybe I'm not that online also, is I do take myself out of a lot of the things I do. And I'm very familiar that that's terrible when you think about growing a brand and not tying a person to it, not tying, you know, a person that people, maybe you'd want to root for me or against me, but that you might get more of a reaction from if I was a little more personable. And on top of that, especially with maybe more of my like community leadership roles, I very much struggle to look like I'm playing favorites. So I try to sometimes be maybe not cold, but at least impersonal for some of those, I don't know, not political reasons per se, but trying to make sure everybody's getting the same experience and interactions with me.
It was a compliment, very much so, in how clear and concise you are. It was then more of an observation that the more clear and concise you are, the maybe the more you lose the Ben, and the more it becomes like a
robot.
Yeah. In
no, it's tough to say that. That was not concise at all. No, it's my words, but I appreciate the compliment. I actually don't think I'm very concise sometimes. Not maybe not sometimes or all the time, but
depends what standards you actually up to, right?
I belabor a lot of the things I do, and sometimes I just say you gotta just publish and share, and more might, you know, help. So definitely balance the quantity and quality game quite a bit. The standards you hold yourself to, it's hard.
I just wanted to,
there's nowhere to pivot from here.
I'll pivot, but I'll travel like you're doing basketball now for every shot and every movement. But anyway, I just wanted to talk about that. It's just something that's been on my mind a lot. When I see a lot of your content, I think about interacting with you a lot. And sometimes I want to speak to you, Ben, you know, and, you know, we don't have the closest relationship, so it's understandable you were going to give me a very clear, concise, or just cold response. But, you know, sometimes I don't want that. I want to talk to the guy, and I want this to be the sort of the theme for the rest of the episode. I still want you to be concise, but I just want to know that, you know,
I'll do my best for you, Scott. I'll do my best. I think I feel the same way as who's Scott Beeks versus who is Scott Beeks around that. The feeling is mutual of like wanting to know more of the people. So I guess I should probably hold myself to the same standard. That's a good call.
Yeah. So for an awful pivot transition,
hold on.
I want to talk about the culture in the US, because I feel like me and you can have a very important conversation about this, and especially that it involves the whole sport for the foreseeable future and forever, in regards to, personally, I have just been feeling, seeing, experiencing the US community moving more and more towards a very competitive atmosphere, environment, and culture. And of course, as a sport becomes more professional, understandable. Like, you know, if people are going to put in more hours, then they expect X, Y, or Z to be more professional, and therefore, you know, they want to get to the top, and it becomes a higher level to get to the top. It's less just, from a beach to a grass field to thousands of athletes versus hundreds of athletes. Like, it's going to move in that direction. However, I really, really worry personally about the future and the culture around there in the US, because I just see it shifting in a direction where players are grinding, get to the top. They get to the top, they get their moment of fame, and they're out. And there's nothing they've given back to the sport. They've just taken a lot. And we've seen that, you know, a lot of players just not playing this season because they gave, you know, a couple of years of their athletic peak or athletic career to the sport. And then there wasn't enough of them to sustain it or stay in it. So they left. And we keep on valuing those people who are grinding to get to the top and hitting these crazy serves and aces and, you know, getting to the top of tournaments. And yet there's no real appreciation or value to those who are creating the base. And me in the US especially, the more you value those who are getting to the top and grinding, the more people who are coming into the sport are then also valuing the same values. And therefore, they are valuing the very top of the sport. And the more people you get in who are valuing the very top of the sport, the less people you get in who are focusing on building the sport and building the community. And it's a negative circle. And if you only then get those people, you don't have a sport in 5 years, or you have one that's super competitive and has no community and no base. And I think that's the opposite, or not the opposite. Europe can always improve on it, but Europe has got a very fine-tuned balance. And you could argue the balance that the US had a couple of years ago and then moved away from. So a warning for Europe. However, I really worry personally about this coming from a European perspective and a US perspective. And I don't know what your view is on it. In regards to the culture right now in the US.
Wow, so much. So to start, I would say the biggest problem that we have in the entire world of RoundNet is what our expectations are for the sport and accepting the reality of it. So I know you had a really good chat with like Chris recently about the ambition to drive the sport forward, the IRF, or we're paving a path to the Olympics. But what we maybe don't do very well or honestly when we talk about the sport is talk honestly about where are we? Are we on step one of 10? Or are we on step one of 1,000? Step two of it, 1,000,000? And I think we're much closer to step two of 1,000,000 than we are on 1 of 5 when it comes to RoundNet being in the Olympics or it being the next great sport, what have you. And so that I think is the first thing, is just like making sure we're all on the same page about where RoundNet is before we can even think about moving forward, taking steps as far as the US culture specifically and kind of the expectations around play, I would agree with you. I think there's a really big gap in how we've set up, not the expectations, but the incentives for people and players to do certain things. And there are some really weird interlocking challenges where people maybe get sucked into, not sucked in, but you get the bug and you say, I just want to travel around and play. And there's not a lot of thought in that. And that's okay because Rounded's a fun game. So it's okay for it to be a fun game. Mm-hmm. But if you come out on the other side of that after a year or two or 5 years and you say, wow, I spent thousands of dollars on these flights and I didn't make that much money, and you retroactively try to retcon that you were supposed to become a professional paid athlete by now, that's a pretty hard pill to swallow. And I think we're not making a lot of intentional moves. I would say in a lot of places, I know very well about the US, to move the sport forward. And at the micro level, it's hard because the micro level, we've got players kind of just looking out for themselves and not necessarily thinking beyond themselves. They're thinking, what can Rounded do for me? Not what can I do for Rounded, which I know we talked a little bit at the top of this, but I would definitely encourage that framing to anybody who's listening to this. I could go on about the US and things I'm trying to do, mm-hmm. Kind of top to bottom, but I don't want to plug too hard.
For me, when you talk about that, I don't think it's plugging. I think it's an honest conversation and opening up about the things you do. And if people don't, I think that's the thing. And
I guess the good thing is I don't get paid by USA Roundnet. So I guess if I plug USA Roundnet, right, like that's probably kosher.
I don't like that feeling that you now feel bad because you have plugged something that could be beneficial to people and you're doing for the benefit of the community. Sure. And people. And if it indirectly also benefits you, for me, that, and you're on a podcast to talk about yourself and the things you do, like that's now you're being too humble, you're being too,
you can imagine why I'm such a robot. But here's a fun fact. I don't think you'll want to guess, but I'll just go to the answer is since 2020, at least, I tried to double check if it was more, at least five brands or entities have run a national championship in the US. So in the US, we had Spike Ball from the 2013, 2012 area running tournaments. And it kind of all made sense at the time. And obviously, one really important goal, if you haven't listened to the conversation with Chris, is Rounded needs to be bigger than Spike Ball so that Roundnet can really do great things. And so Spike Ball recognized that. Jack and Nora recognized that from a sport development standpoint. Some good history about USA Roundnet elsewhere. But yeah, Utah Roundnet, Spike Ball, PRA, ASL, and USA Roundnet have all run national championships in the US.
Mm-hmm.
Again, I volunteer for USA Roundnet. I think that the way that governing bodies work in other sports for the Olympics, how they're working in other countries for Roundnet, it makes sense to have an NGB that works on this stuff. And so that's a maybe longer conversation on the why and how of it, but more succinctly on growing the sport. We're not on the same page in the US about what the goal is. We've got a lot of maybe offshoot goals, different things going on. And so, yeah, it's going to be very hard to keep people in a community in a sport if we don't have a shared vision about what we want to work on and grow together. So I think that's step one.
That's fantastic point and an incredible transition to the next topic that I want to discuss with you.
I owed you one.
Yeah. In regards to what is USAR's goal and future ambitions, because if I just touch on this, obviously looking at it from a European perspective, we have a very clear structure in place. And in that, and a lot of it has been given by the culture within Europe, where we have more of a club culture versus a college culture, which obviously then benefits people massively, especially if we're looking at this as a sport instead of just a hobby you play for 4 or 5 years during college. But we do have a club system. You have the clubs. Once you have the clubs, you have your national governing body. So let's take Austria, for example. Austria will have clubs in different regions, Vienna, Graz, and then they would have Rounded Austria. And then Rounded Austria will contribute to the European Rounded Association. And everything is intertwined and interlinked. And you have a clear funnel for players to go, okay, do I want to play recreationally? Do I want to be best in my city, best in my country, best in Europe? And then best in the world for worlds. But it's a clear pathway. And you can choose whatever path you choose and how much you want to travel. And in the US, to compare it, you have what you used to have, just sporadic groups of players in different areas of the country. And then you add some college teams and some college systems. And then you might have the odd club and the odd, you know, Utah round net region that has a round net group. And now you have PRA round net doing their own tour series and own thing. You have Spyball tour series now doing their own tour series and own thing. You have USAR now trying to do their own thing. And you've also got ASL now coming in and doing their own thing. And then states trying to do all their own thing on top of that. There's no cohesion. There's no funnel. It's all let's do our thing and then let's see what happens. It's not going to be a sustainable method. And I know you know a lot of this, but yeah, feel free to build off that because it's just
it lays things out for people who aren't me. So again, it's not about me, right? It's about you, the listener. So again, the question, what can I do for RoundNet? Not what can RoundNet do for me. I'm not going to belabor if one person's doing more for RoundNet or less for RoundNet. But generally speaking, the vision for USA RoundNet, yeah, build legitimacy for the sport. Yes, you know, promote the high level and go and compete for the world championships. And at the same time, foster youth development programs, foster local community connections, connect with every existing, whether it's a club in a university or a college for the Americans, or if it's a club that is just city agnostic. There's so many different people that are doing RoundNet related community building. And when you ask them, hey, would you like to be, I think it's the same way, honestly. We've all done this, actually, if you're listening. You're playing pickup and you see someone playing on, usually it's like a base spike ball set, and you say, would you like to come join our club in training? You want to be part of this bigger thing? And sometimes you get a yes and sometimes you get a no. And the stakes aren't really high in that situation because you're just doing advocacy and ambassadorship. But the challenge for the U.S. when I think about, hey, do you want to be part of this national community or not, is a lot of the people that are thinking about these topics now don't have the same, respectfully, long view that I have, which is I'm not the only person who wanted something like USA RoundNet to exist. And as a matter of fact, going back to the 2016s, 2017s, when we thought about, hey, Spikeball's doing these things, but really like the players or the community should have a say over how this all works. All of those, all the groundwork really is there. And I so wish to like kind of just transfer all the context I have for the need for a national governing body to maybe someone who doesn't really get the connection. Because not everybody is familiar with the governing, you know, processes for growing a sport. Yeah. But yeah, as far as how we connect all these things, I mean, you can kind of see as one example, very simply, the national series this year, the decision.
We're from the USA national series.
Yeah. So talking about, the US national series, for the US RoundNet national series, the decision for where these big tournaments were placed was, by and large, a decision based on who's already running sanctioned tournaments and has bought into the system so we can reward these communities for contributing to growing this national ecosystem. Because at the end of the day, I know you've spoken a lot and there's been a lot of changes for how EURA does their gold, their pro statuses now. To have connective tissue between a tournament that happens on the Pacific and one that happens on the Atlantic, and to have similar language and similar ecosystems together so that when we do come together, we can all understand one another, both not just on a skill level, but also from a community development standpoint, it's invaluable. It's very hard to measure. I can't say that if we have X USA RoundNet events or X USA RoundNet members, it will mean we can magically pay pros, you know, all the money they want, because that's unrealistic. But I think another really big challenge for something like a USA RoundNet, and I think it's been hamstrung a bit, is when we've set the vision for it, I think the pacing for what we do and how we legitimize not just the sport, but also the organization, is there's actually infinite things to do. There's not a shortage of ideas. I have more ideas that I can execute on, and I frequently get requests for things that I could do or another volunteer could work on. But the reality is, and I know you talked to Chris about this too, I'm sorry, I'm doing so many callbacks because it's fresh on my mind, is there's so many people that are passionate about RoundNet and want it to grow and want it to be bigger and better. I'm not saying that USA RoundNet, if you're an American, is the only way that RoundNet can be grown, or connecting your local organization to US RoundNet is the only way that RoundNet can be grown. But I would say it's definitely a really good way to do it. Yeah. So at the end of the day, we probably won't get to, you know, feel the benefits of these things short term. And yes, there's an inherent cost of being a member. But at the same time, it also kind of reaffirms what you're showing up for, and not just talking the talk of wanting around to be a big sport, but actually walking it, I think is something we really sorely lack when we think about wanting to grow the sport.
Well, and that's the key. It's if people then do have the incentive and do want to walk the walk and not just talk the talk, it's where can they best help? Where is their time, their energy best spent? And for some, it's just to a lack of not knowing where that time is best spent. And so it will be spent maybe even in a direction that's not in cohesion with the long-term sustainable future or future of the sport.
Of course. Because if it's just a hobby for you, if you want to just play this fun game and travel for a couple of years and then go let reality set in that you don't want to do this for a long time. Again, a European and American difference is this culture of like being active and sporting for life versus I sport during my university years. So USA Roundup can't solve that. We of course want to, you know, contribute to moving the needle, but there's a lot of other big boulders we have to tackle. But yeah, if it's things that you want to know, how can I help? There's lots of ways to get plugged in. And I think for me, I'm trying more and more to not just figure out what can I do for Roundup, but also similarly try to point towards, hey, here's the thing I do for Roundup. You could also do this in your local community. You could not, you know, just play pickup with the same four people all the time and once in a while, bring in some newbies. You could. Well,
yep. I think that's to do a callback Ben style. I mean, one of our most listened to and successful episodes last year, or even late season one, was your role in RoundNet. Because so many people resonated it and they said, if we're only valuing the top players and those who are going out and grinding, then that's all the people what people are going to do when they come in. If we value those who are photographers, those who are bringing their expertise within their field, whether it be videography, editing, photography, streaming, podcasting, if we're bringing people who have those abilities and passions inside the sport, we're doing amazing. And those people must be valued, because if not, again, why would you do it? So it's not just obviously knowing your hours and how you can best benefit the sport, but it's also like actually having the willingness to do it. Because a lot of people will be listening to this, and you know, and they will be doing a lot, I'm sure. You know, a lot of our listeners have already reached out and say that they do X, Y, Z, and that's why they like the episode so much. And maybe they thought more about it after that episode of Rolling Around It. But either way, there's so much that can be done.
So yeah. Well, first I have to retort and do a callback at the same time to a conversation we had in Toulouse before you ran that clinic.
This is a bigger throwback.
It's okay, I'll remind you. Okay. Is the Rolling Round Net, my big critique for these kinds of episodes is talking about not just the top players, not just these other roles, but these hyper specialized things. Mm-hmm. And what I actually think everybody stands to do as far as their role in Round Net is just be a better Round Net citizen. That's things like showing up on time. That's things like putting your scores in. These aren't flashy things. And at the same time, if everybody does these things well, I think it's, oh man, what's it? The categorical imperative. I was listening to a video from Much Smarter People talk about it. But basically what it means is if I were to do X thing and everybody else also did that thing, would the world be a better place or a worse place? And just thinking in that frame of mind, again, back to this givers and takers.
Yes.
Can I be a better round net player? Not like serve-wise, but like just community-wise and culture-wise. Yes. And the other similar callback on your role in RoundNet is the sport is small enough now that candidly, if you're listening to this podcast, you need to be an ambassador for RoundNet in some way. It doesn't need to be podcasting and it doesn't need to be observing, but maybe you're just a friendly face who picks up balls during a semifinal if you're cheering people on and now the tournament goes 2 minutes faster because he picked up balls. Maybe you're just being encouraging to the new player who is at your pickup. There's so many ways that you can be a better ambassador for the sport that bring people in compared to, I think we often get lost comparing ourselves to the biggest sports in the world. And there's a lot of steps along the way and sports that are ahead of us that have way more people as ambassadors for the sport, not just in name, but in function and in activity.
Yep. 100%.
Sorry, that's a plug for RoundNet, my bad.
Indeed it is. 100% true. I totally agree. And I think, again, it just comes back and why I emphasized it at the very start of this podcast and what we value as a RoundNet community. Because if we don't value those people who are just picking up balls and, you know, and just helping the tournament run a little bit quicker and, you know, doing the thing that to get to make the world a better place, either in a very small way or in a very large way, either way, if it's not valued by the community, then, well, who's going to do it? And if people stop doing it, then you know, there's nothing. We have nothing.
We can't wonder why. We know exactly why people stop doing the things we don't value. 100%.
And the thing that gets me, I just can't understand from my perspective why there's not more top players who are trying to actively improve the sport. And just, I know they want to, they have a quantity of hours, and that quantity of hours they want to put to themselves and also themselves to fulfill their incentive in the sport, which may be just to get a self-fulfillment through being a top level or a high level player within a sport. That's fine. You're true to that. Like, there's always can be a portion who has that. But if that proportion becomes way too disproportionate to the Roundnet community as a whole, we're struggling, as we mentioned. But I just keep on saying this because if these top players, well, these top players don't understand, is that if they do more, if they give more, and they help more people to also give more because they're in a position to do so with people seeing and viewing them and following them, then, well, if they do that and other people do that, they directly or indirectly, sorry, get the benefits of it, because if more people come into the sport in another year, 2 years, well, there's going to be more prize money and there's going to be more sponsors and there'll be more gameplay because people have been encouraged, more people to change and do testing or experiment and what X, Y, or Z. Because again, there's 1,001 things we could do in RoundNet. The overwhelming part is that there is so many, and I can understand that, but however you want to impact it, little one or a big part, it comes back round in a positive way for you if your incentive is to grow the sport and to have other people experience what you've experienced. I mean, so lucky to experience other people have it in other sports ever in their life. You got through RoundNet.
And just to emphasize that, I think when I first was playing in tournaments, I know, a long time ago, so y'all never saw it. It's all enlisted footage. Like, they were just a fun thing. People were coming to tournaments as like an experience.
Yeah.
And there were the two or three people that were excellent. You know, like Peter John Showalter was coming to tournaments and I was like, oh, that's weird. You look athletic. Nice to meet you. And then everybody else was like, wow, isn't this so fun? We're just playing this game. And for top players, they also were living that ethos of it being a fun thing. And this doesn't take any more hours from top players to, again, be ambassadors for the sport in a way that you're maybe adding a little more positive energy to it. I think something as simple and small as how you show up as like a self-officiated player, and you're making, you know, loudmouth calls, and you're being toxic when the observer makes a call that doesn't go your way. You know, football, when there's the bad guys and the bad girls that are making, you know, upset calls, the sport's big enough to handle that. RoundNet's not, I don't think. I think people instead just watch that and mirror it, and then lower level players show up to tournaments and wonder why everyone's being mean to them, and it's because we're just imitating what we see. So
yeah,
that's something that I would challenge everybody to think about what kind of role model you want to be, and again, I think even for you or me with the platforms that we've built, it's something I try to avoid sometimes. It's like, oh no, people don't really worry about it, what I say, and then people say, no, I actually would like to hear your opinion on this, and so I have to think twice. So I don't love having the platform most of the time, but I also am grateful that I'm able to hopefully make positive change the same way. So yeah. For players, so I think it's the same responsibility. What's that Uncle Ben quote from Spider-Man?
Great power becomes great responsibility, indeed.
Yes. Indeed. Okay, sorry. I was just doing like a little like pop culture quiz. I don't know how much cinema you get to watch with all your work.
Did when I was younger, less so now. Don't quote me on Oppenheim or other films I haven't seen yet. But
touche.
But yeah, no, 100%. It's a great point. And I think more players and more top players need to understand they are role models. For me, when I see people like make calls and stuff like this and way go over the threshold of what RoundNet is right now, especially coming from like football background, like, you know, I'm playing football in the morning, you know, I'm in a D1 level, which is like, you know, a decent level, but it's not like, you know, the Premier League. And, you know, it's so much bigger, you know, it's a global sport. And I'm then going to a tournament playing this tiny little 0.1 sport. And I see people like bad mouthing and giving calls. For me, it's embarrassing. And I really do feel that. I think cringe, yeah, a little bit inside. It's like, you don't even, this sport is nothing. And with you acting like that, will become nothing. And with the other actions you do in the sport, are nothing. And I'll just say this, because I usually don't like voice my opinion massively on
this. Like, Sky, you're going so negative, yeah.
But I just feel passionate. I just don't want to waste my time with people who aren't in aligned or have the same incentives that I do. I've sort of come to that conclusion. And if some people, and this is the thing here, and this is key to this season, is that if people are listening to this and they're thinking, damn, I do that. Well, or maybe I do that. Well, I'm calling you out here. And if I'm saying all this and you're just listening to me and you're just thinking, yeah, I agree, Scott, like, yeah, or you can see at least the argument, then fair. But if you're listening to this and you're thinking like, oh, dang, yeah, he may be calling me out there. I'm a little bit angry at Scott because he's calling me out. Well, me, I'm a big boy. Get angry. Like, I don't care. Like, but also take it as you're getting called out because the sport is so tiny. It's embarrassing when you do things. And that's just one thing that you mentioned. There's other things that people do that it's like...
Sure. If I can just add, like, not only for high-level players, but I think just, like, if you're the best player at your, like, college club pickup,
yep,
and you are trying to, like, win the games by call-balling at your local college pickup, like, you are also on notice for this. Just, like, you don't have to be a very good roundup player to be, like, setting a bad example in your local hub, too. So...
100%. It wasn't a call out to players. It was a call out to the attitude. So regardless of whether you are the first time playing in your group before and you're like that, or whether you're a top player playing on a pro now,
and I think it comes back to still just like the expectation setting and the context that, for me, I wonder, like, have I not done a good enough job, like, letting people know where round it has been and where it's going, and that we need to be realistic about where it is. Like, to what extent,
weigh on your shoulders if you're feeling that.
To what extent I do feel it, and then I also remember that no one's paying me to do the work, so then I'm like, you know, if I get it done, if I get more than zero done, amazing. It's this thing called zero-based expectations, taken from zero-based budgeting. But to make the point more soundly, it's if you don't know about the sport and you're, like, not curious about it, like, at least for one, try not to just make assumptions about how the sport is or where it is. I have a much longer piece I'll plug about, like, just why it's hard to talk about round, and it's because, like you said, everything's just all over the place and it's disjointed, and it's challenging because we're all having a fun time, but at the end of the day, like, someone's got to keep the music going. And
to sort of build off that point, sir, and talking about solutions and ideas, right, is what do you see for USAR next year in 2025? Because from my perspective, and also being a member of the Euro board, is obviously we're looking at the tournaments, and we're going, okay, we don't want to oversupply the market, right? If we oversupply the market, then there's not going to be enough teams who are going to NGB events and growing their local community and going to their local club events. So we need to not oversupply the market, but we need to give there enough, you know, meet the demand. And it also is great.
Yeah, and you guys are going on wait lists on day one, right? So it's a very different situation.
And it's also very important that obviously this tour series, and I say this with a caveat that we try our best, the European Rounding Association, but we're also voluntary basis. We also have an infinitive amount of things we could do and should do, and we try to make the best of the decisions and the things we have. Do we do everything perfect? Absolutely not. Have we done a lot since we've come in? God, yes. But either way, I just want to state that, you know, when the season's coming, we are making the season schedule for the next year, because we know that we're the leading domino for many clubs and many NGBs to then follow suit, because we need that cohesion and we need the collaboration of the NGBs and clubs. If it don't have that, again, everything's just a mess, which is why I come back to USAR.
The huge thing here is in Europe, every European roundup player wants to be part of Round of Europe, right? There's kind of a clear structure.
Yes.
So it's certainly a chicken and egg situation where USA Round It can't really, it's a nonprofit, right? We can't waste our members' money doing something that doesn't benefit our members. And at the same time, we want our members to want the things that move the sport forward so that we can invest in those initiatives. So when we think about what the US ecosystem is going to look like, I think it's challenging because compared to at least how the ETS and the EURA system works, we've got two big differences. One is we've got a horseshoe, not a circle. So we can add more sanctioned events throughout the year. I hope we do. I probably want to sanction more events that I run as a TD locally too. And that's because we're in a position where we need to be welcoming more and more people into the US ecosystem. And it's also a bigger country where it's harder to travel to and so forth. So we need to continue building out the schedule iteratively, is the state of where US development is. And at the same time, if we don't have that many events that are sanctioned in the US, there's going to be a void filled. People are running tournaments all the time in the US, and very confusingly, right? We talk about players burning out and quitting because they spend too much money traveling and not getting prize money, even though they shouldn't expect too much prize money. But also, they just don't take off weekends. It's very confusing, the behavior, not from all roundup players, but from some roundup players, and ones that, when I think about growing the, not just the high level of the sport, but really, like, captivating the attention of the high level and having everybody focus on wanting to grow the US ecosystem together, it's very challenging to serve that audience. But yeah, I know you wanted to talk about, you might have had a question in there.
So that's all the question was, is that, right, we look at it from this year perspective, 2024, right? Sure. Spikeball, everyone's sort of waiting for the Spikeball Tour Series domino to drop, because all the players are valuing that tour series over everything else, because that's the most important. Why? Because that's the one that gives the most prestige and status. So which, why? Because most players are going to go to those events because they're trying to fulfill a need.
Yeah.
In
how many wives can we do?
Status within a sport that they may have not got through another sport. And so people follow that pro players because that's the competition and that's the scene and that's the storylines. So it's very difficult then for USAR to now come on the scene and overtake that, especially when you do not have any resources to revenue or funds that the Spikeball Tour Series could give and have given throughout these past few years to these events. And also, you don't have the history of Premier, Pro, or L, whatever you want to call it, gold, the status that also many people are chasing in this sport. Many people come in to get Premier and they leave. And if you gather events for people that aren't for that, that don't want the Pro or Premier status, and you just have it to build out USAR and the foundation of the sport, well, a lot of those people go to events because they also want to see the top players play. So it's like people move with the top players, and the top players are seeking status, and the status is only at the Spikeball Tour Series sort of ish for now. Oh, but you have the Year of Worlds, but I personally worry about next year when it's not the Year of Worlds, what position is USAR going to take? Because we already see now that there's such a saturated market around events in the US, but there's no cohesion, and everyone's leading off the Spikeball Tour Series. Do we need a Spikeball Tour Series for 2025? What role do they play? And how does that transition, if it does ever transition, into USAR? I know, a loaded question, so I apologize, but obviously a lot to digest.
Yeah. So I first want to say change management is really hard. Culture change is really hard. And so for players who come into this ecosystem maybe a year or two ago, and it's Spikeball, and Tour Series in the US, and you hear about Worlds of 2022, you're like, yeah, but I'm not going to be on Team USA. Why do I care? USA Roundnut cares about anybody that's playing Roundnut in the US and wants to connect every single one of you. Yeah. Yeah, we want to win Worlds. And obviously that's the flashy thing. It's just like the reverse cut. But we also are very much valuing and care about how can we support people that are just playing pickup, not even like going out and playing tournaments, just have your local community. And so to come back to this question of what do we do? I'm going to assign everybody some reading to go look at the US player status. It's one of the more weird ways we've tried to, kind of come up with ways for players to progress. But it better connects all the events in the US. And as a fun fact, last year, 50% of sanctioned events in the US were not part of the Spikeball Tour Series. So we've already seen more and more cohesion, right? I think you can kind of look at the glass half full, the glass half empty. I'm usually a pessimist myself for everything. And I'm incredibly critical of myself as well. So yeah, I look at all the events that are happening, and sometimes players tell me, hey, why isn't this player higher on the rankings? I think they're really good. And I say, well, that's crazy. You guys should probably sanction the events that they're showing up so well in, because otherwise we've just got someone who's playing high level pickup for a year at a time. And that's just the harsh reality. I know a separate topic that probably doesn't matter much discussion is that it's really hard to build objective model-based rankings and have them be not too volatile with the state of how tournaments go. So I'll leave that to the data scientists.
No, I don't want to touch more rankings, but continue.
But generally, as far as, what the tournament series looks like and how we kind of build the ecosystem that people want to be a part of, I think, of course, there's a national championship next year, like there will be every year for the US, and having the tour series continue to build toward it the same way it does this year will continue to be a valuable thing. And like you mentioned, people caring about the status that comes with the Spikeball Tour Series historically, where last year was the first time ever that the US national championship was not also the Spikeball Tour Series championship, is a really hard thing. And I have a ton of patience for someone who isn't reading about all the things and doesn't know the context that I have for why it's important to have a separate national tour series and a separate national championship that is run not by a company or a local community randomly, but just like sanctioned by a national governing body, which represents every single person that's a member of it. It's complicated and messy. And sometimes I don't want to obfuscate like the complexity, but I also want to just like simply say, hey guys, it's easy actually. Just do USA Roundnut things and then problem solved. Not actually, but we'll fix it eventually.
Yep.
And that's the short version of it, I think. Is there more that you're wondering about for how USA RoundNet pushes things forward?
Well, the more of the wonder is next year's 2025. I mean, what I want to sort of come back to this supply and demand market. I understand the USA are trying to bring cohesion while fighting many different factors, cultural factors, history factors, the Spiral Tour series having such an influence. So it's many factors you're fighting. And you've talked about sort of your goals, but how are you planning on, you know, moving everything closer? You can simply say, yeah, just support USA around there and then we'll fix it. And I can you know, somewhat agree. And I do personally believe that, coming from especially a European background, where, you know, if you believe in the European Round Association, then believe in them, and then everything else, you know, the system fills itself. But I struggle to see how that's going to change, especially next year, and especially with you know, Spike World Tour Series, from what I've heard, and planning on, you know, another season next year, and planning to be more involved in the tournament schedule, because again, they're the leading domino. People go their round net calendars and they go, yeah, all right, Spike World Tour Series are May, June 2nd. Okay, next. Maybe USAR round net? Okay, USAR round net in August, yeah, November. And then they go, okay, state champ or state events, California round net. Okay, May. And then they, I'm not saying this is everyone. And again, USAR need to account for everyone who's playing round, and not just the competitive players, but the competitive players somewhat hold the key, because people are going to the events and they're the ones traveling, and they're the ones who lesser players are going to watch, and they're the ones that bring the status to the event. You get them and you know, everything sort of follows. I would disagree
with the assumptions that high level players hold the keys to all things that are happening.
I don't think high level players
hold the keys to some of the things.
Hold a key and there's many keys.
Hold a key. Okay, sure. But yes, I think one of the biggest challenges, and this is mostly for US events right now, is everything needs to be the event. And like you mentioned with supply and demand, that's not really possible. And if it's Spike Ball Tour Series as a specific example for this conversation, anything that you do is the most important thing you do, and anything that I do is the most important thing I do. And so the harsh reality, there's two things going on. First off, every player needs something different. Like we mentioned, there's high level players, there's local players that should pop out to tournaments and so forth. And so USA RoundNet struggles to need to serve every single one of them as optimally as possible. They need different things, and USA RoundNet needs to serve all of them. So that's one constraint. And then the other constraint is USA RoundNet is doing the most important thing to USA RoundNet at any given time. So the National Series, that's the most important series as far as USA RoundNet's concerned. Spike Ball has obviously supported the USA RoundNet series in some ways this year, and they continue to do their events, which are, in my understanding, generally going to be sanctioned with the US also when they're US-based, which is wonderful. And all I can do, and what I usually do when I talk about RoundNet things like this, is I know that there's the conventional wisdom, and I've got 3, 4, 5 other perspectives, and they're all pretty valid and thought out. And so all I can do is just shout them out and ask people to consider them, think critically, and hopefully move forward with that adoption. Like you mentioned, if people in Europe said, you know what, actually, all of the German tournaments are the most important, so I'm not going to go to the EU events, then we'd have a problem. But luckily, there's a culture and acceptance already of how things are. And I'm not an expert in change management, but if anybody wants to help me out with getting more and more of this community, the people that say they care about RoundNet, and I say, look, guys, this is how it's got to go for us to move forward, and try to, you know, make those adjustments happen over time, that'd be great. In the meantime, all I can do as a volunteer, and all other people can do as volunteers, and some stipended folks at USA RoundNet can do, is just move the needle one step at a time. And I think, like you say, there's keys held by lots of different people. I think the sport will move so much faster if we all turn the key to the same door. And right now, we're not even in the same neighborhood on some of these conversations.
Well, let's talk about one more of the big keys on the keychain, and that's Spikeball. How much is the collaboration between USAR and Spikeball? How much do you? We're talking about a lot of cohesion and a lot of the vision for RoundNet and the sport. How much is Spikeball agreeing and following the vision that USAR have for the sport in the US? And how much is that two people, again, not in line and not in connection with their ambitions and goals?
Yeah. So we know that RoundNet needs to be bigger than Spikeball in order for RoundNet to really grow. And I think Spikeball, similar to the US organization, has gone through a lot of change over the last few years from an organizational standpoint of what they are and are not in charge of from a sport development standpoint. And that's confusing because they have a really good track record of putting in all these hours. And now we need to, not just as an organization, but also as a whole overall body, take initiative and set ownership and vision for how the sport grows in the US. And for spike ball, it's confusing. I think for both spike ball and for US round and for round net players in the US, is the spike ball tour series does good things for US for spike ball. The spike ball tour series is an excellent marketing tool to get out there. And so if there's not a USA round net tournament on a specific weekend, why not have a challenger somewhere in the US? Or even if there is a regional or a national championship, why not have a challenger in the US if you're spike ball? So I think if I was to say, does spike ball have to be 100% putting USA round net first above what it's doing in its own interests? No, that's not reasonable. But I think to put a finer point on it, anytime you're seeing maybe friction between, oh, well, spike ball wants this, but USA round net wants that, the question now becomes for the player, instead of saying, oh, I really want spike ball to focus on round net as an American, you actually can contribute to the sport moving forward through an organization that is singularly focused on the sport versus any other organization that is maybe not a nonprofit, but also is doing rounded things and also has their business or brand or promotional interests that is separate from just running and growing the sport. So I think that's like the gap there is spike ball can't afford to just focus on round net. And that's where the distinctions are going to be in visions being different.
I can somewhat agree with you, but I struggle from, and this builds off from the conversation with Chris on last episode, is that, and I said it, and I didn't really follow up on the question, but if Spikeball's aim as a company is obviously to make money, and one of their aims is also to grow the sport around it. And so if you're trying to grow the sport around it, any growth is going to therefore result in sales of your sets, whether that be one in four of those people who are exposed to round net buy your sets, or all four of them buy your sets. A growth for round net is a win for every round net manufacturer at some point, and the community, as long as we withhold these community values, I believe, because if we don't, then we might as well just, I don't have that much passion.
I don't think you're listening to, yeah, I don't think you got this far.
But yeah. But if Spikeball's aim is therefore to grow the next sports, then right now they have all they could have wanted in people on a voluntary basis making up NGBs and boards with the sole interest of growing the sport. So then my question is sort of to you and then Spikeball is, Spikeball, why would they not just really, really help the NGBs and NGBs and obviously USAR RoundNet within that? Because if they do that, RoundNet, there's people already in a position who are doing a good job, but they can only do it on a voluntary basis. But they know exactly what they're doing, and their sole purpose is to grow around it. And again, sole purpose around it, we've already directly correlated growth around it, growth of sales. And right now, 4 or 5 years ago, we didn't have these people in place to grow the sport. But now we've got snowballs at the top of every hill in almost every country. Not every country, that's very much a hope. But many countries, we have a snowball at the top of every hill. And yet, we're going down really slow because the mountain and the hill is not downhill slope. It is almost flat at times. And flat, not due to any other reason than a lack of time or effort that these people can put in. Yourself being one of them. Imagine if you could do round net full time and do it a lot of time. Imagine how quickly that snowball would go down the hill. And then again, the more snowballs fall down the hill from not just one hill, but several hills, my gosh, you get the benefits of the bottom because Spikeball are at the bottom collecting snow and then they're selling the snow. Excuse my metaphor, but it's just like, for me, I think Spikeball could be doing so much more for USAR round net, you know, financially, supportive wise. I'm not saying they don't do some, I'm just saying that it's in place. It's in place. It hasn't been in place at all.
Sure. I'll try to speak to a couple of things. So first, the analogy is fine, but what it ignores is, or maybe just doesn't account for, is there's an ROI that Spikeball gets from supporting RoundNet, like you mentioned. And I think everyone's bought in on that. Spikeball's even bought in on that. But what's also an option are other levers that Spikeball is able to pull to grow Spikeball, right? So growing RoundNet could grow Spikeball, but some other things that they're able to do also grow Spikeball. So maybe they're looking at better, maybe they're looking at some black diamond slopes that they can go down right now, and growing RoundNet isn't as steep of a slope to more easily get pushed down.
I disagree.
Is at least
you
one
can
thing.
Say that. You can say
I just don't have that information.
No, me neither. Like, but I do have the history of previous years and actions. And right now, there's also never been in a position where there's been so many NGBs across the world with so many boards where if you are in position to help, but just can't due to lack of hours and energy and money.
Sure. And I think the other challenge there is all the people that are around the world that are infinitely passionate. The other thing that I would call out, this is, so there's a Spikeball side of what other things they can pursue to improve their business. Again, I haven't worked for Spikeball, but I've worked with them. And then for the NGBs is Spikeball also doesn't know the quantity and the quality of the people that are working on these things.
100%.
And I can speak to just all these people around the world that are working hard around that. I'm not saying they're doing a bad job or that they're not capable. I'm saying if I'm investing resources in them, right? Like there's a lot of unknowns. It sounds like, you know, just throwing money at a thing that is maybe high variance, maybe it could be very good, maybe not. So I think those are two really good variables. And then separate from the analogy, I'll just call out if people in the US are like, hey, what has Spikeball done for USA RoundNet? This is public information. We had about 2,000 members in 2022. And at the same time, if you were playing in a Spikeball Tour Series event that was a USA, you know, sanctioned event, they gave you a $15 discount because you had to buy a $20 membership. So that's $30,000, 15 times 2,000 live math. So Spikeball has definitely put money towards USA RoundNet and growing the sport. I think the challenge for growing the sport is
could you repeat that?
Sure.
They gave 15%, if they signed up to a Spikeball Challenger or a Spikeball event, you got USAR RoundNet membership.
Yeah, I can lay this out for folks.
Yeah, $15 off a $20 USAR membership. But that's,
sure.
That's money they were not expecting, no? Or money they were expecting, they just gave a $15 coupon off the registration that people were already paying to go towards USAR RoundNet.
Yeah, just to set the stage, right? This is the first year that USA RoundNet had a membership program, and it was $20 per member. And from Spikeball's perspective, they said, well, we want to sanction events in the U.S., but we also understand people are going to be confused by having to pay this additional $20 to play in our events. We want to grease the wheels and support USA RoundNet and also make it easier for players to adopt this change. So we will give a $15 discount to each player that is signing up for a membership, and they can use this code to save $15. So effectively, if you gave USA RoundNet $20, but you got $15 back from Spikeball, that's basically Spikeball giving $15 per USA RoundNet member to the organization times 2,000 members is basically $30,000 that Spikeball was putting into USA RoundNet's pockets. So that was something that wasn't even really a sponsorship. It was really like we want to buy in and we see this friction here. And I think it's the same friction that maybe people see now when wondering, we now can charge $5 for just a one-off non-member fee, which is great because it makes things much easier to support TDs. And getting over those humps is still challenging for folks. But for Spikeball, that was one concrete empirical example that maybe you might not know. And so for you listening, just want to let you know, like, Spikeball has definitely shown support in some of those ways. And how much of an impact did it have on the sport? Again, I don't know exactly, but it probably meant we got a couple more people to not skip out on tournaments because of this weird fee. So yeah, there's some examples of Spikeball doing that. There's examples of Spikeball doing, like Chris mentioned, you know, maybe could have done more. And I feel the same way. I think there's a lot of ideas out there and limited resources.
Yeah.
But I know you were focused on the USA RoundNet and Spikeball co-vision for growing the sport in the US. And I think, it's an ongoing challenge because USA RoundNet and Spikeball are both still learning the best ways to do those things and have slightly different ideas for what they want to do. Insofar as the national championship being more important than the Spikeball Tour Series championship, it really just comes down to the eye of the beholder.
Yes, which is a very simple way to end it. And we don't need to continue a resources conversation, but
sure.
Yeah, that eye of the perspective is how do you change your perspective? And there are obviously conversations and thoughts, but for if we plan to go more into it, but I don't think we need to. And I think we've talked about the USAR and Spikeball and USAR's future quite a lot. I think I'd like to move on to a little bit and talk about the Round Network, because obviously you were a huge part of this. I know we had you and Albert on mid-season 2, I believe, to talk about the project, talk about your thoughts. I think a lot of people are obviously fans of the project, right? And are wondering, well, you know, what's the situation? Is there going to be more in the works, whether they've seen it on ESPN, whether they watched it on YouTube? That has obviously been a very much a slower communication and slower upload speed, whatever you want to call it, or it's just a slowing down of the project in general. where does it sort of stand right now? Because again, I think a lot of people are interested in that, and also the role you played in it.
Yeah, I'll just speak to the uploads right now. There's actually some uploads, I'll say April 2024, that are online for supporters of Round Network, and they'll go out publicly, you know, soon after that. But I do like to give the edits to the people that support us first. Mm-hmm. As far as I think the context, thinking back to last year and the work that went into last year, I would characterize the hours that Albert and I were able to put in last year as something to the effect of Albert working almost full time on Round Network, and myself, I mean, the brain never stops for me, unfortunately, and there's a lot of interconnectivity, but more of like a part-time job that I had on top of the other part-time, full-time RoundNet, you know, pro bono work that I was doing when I was on personal sabbatical for my career. And Albert and I are both just as passionate about RoundNet content right now. But the one thing that has changed is Albert now has a more full-time job versus last year he was working a contracted job in addition to doing his full-time RoundNet job. And I also have a full-time job now. And those are things that we've had to do personally because, well, you know, we both love RoundNet, but we also love other things. But also because we were not doing RoundNet work as a full-time job. I think if you were to do a pie chart of support from sponsors, from the community, and from ourselves, just doing pro bono work, the work that we put in is probably close to 80-90% of the pie chart. So covering that pie chart is a really challenging thing.
How big was the pie chart? Not big enough, obviously, and not just a percentage.
Sure.
Pie chart wasn't big enough in general, of course, for it to be sustainable.
Right. So that context being set, when I think about uploads now, and Albert loves to remind me because I'm fully capable. I'm not a capable documentarian, but I am I would say I'm probably the second best post-produced game editor of RoundNet in the entire world, to second to Albert, of course. And he loves to remind me how many amazing games were filmed last year that people can't enjoy yet. And when I think about, I know we've talked plenty about the limited time and energy you have. It's something that I have the itch to continue doing and getting games out to you all. But actually something else I did is I also trained 4 different people to edit our games the way that we edit them and have gotten them to a certain level. But the big catch is I refuse to not pay them. So if I don't have money to pay them, then I can't ask them to do my work. And I also, you know, I'd love to pay myself to do the work too, but, you know, I love to put myself last. So when it comes to uploading more games, more stories, more content, I think it's a big question mark right now. Unfortunately, we would love to be able to say we know exactly what's going on. I will you know, tease that we would of course love to film the World Championship in some meaningful capacity, and that's something we're continuing to think about. But again, if it's something that you love out there, and you have a really wealthy relative, let me know.
That's all good information, and I appreciate you sharing. There's nothing massive I want to discuss with you, Ben. I one last thing I want to draw back to. It's more on a new Ben Dantowitz, not the RoundNet Ben. Sure. Is there anything else you want to touch on RoundNet side before I sort of discuss this last topic with you? Then feel free to mention it if there's anything else you want to mention.
I think I just want to really reemphasize to just ask like what you're doing for RoundNet, and not that you're not doing anything good for RoundNet if you're hearing me ask the question, but just truly genuinely ask, what are you doing for RoundNet? And to the similar effect, ask yourself, what happens if the people that are doing the things that you care about can't afford to just do that thing? Do they have to stop eventually? Because that's what I think about a lot. I think about, what if I just don't feel like doing this stuff anymore because life happens? And just my personal statement on the RoundNet things I do is I'm now working very cognizantly to make sure that I try to pay myself a little bit for some of the things I do that are not volunteering, so that when I want to stop, I can pay somebody else to do it instead. So just think sustainably. Pick up the trash at tournaments. I know I have like 5 things I wanted to say, but you're welcome to ask me personal questions too. I will try my best to entertain and be authentic about it.
I actually just want to end this conversation. It doesn't even need to be a huge discussion. I like discussing this topic with many people in rounded context and just life, normal, just a regular Ben and Scott conversations. Is that I know you're a fan of books, as you mentioned quite a few on this podcast. I'm also a fan, more of a listener than a fake, a fake book reader, more of a listener than a reader. But one of the books that I read that's resonated with me a lot, it's called Stop People Pleasing. For those that don't know or that are aware of it, it basically discusses the topic of why do you do the things you do? Do you do things to people, like please people, to gain your own self-fulfillment, to gain a good feeling in your, your heart, your for what you're doing? Or do you do it for the incentive of them feeling good, them being able to experience what you went through, for them to be able to experience something without you having to get an instant or long-term gain, just doing it for the benefit of someone else? I only mention this to you, Ben, just because you say a lot in regards to I'm doing a lot for other people and I'm doing it to, this and that. I wouldn't put myself in, and a lot of it's incredibly, incredibly inspirational and incredibly humble of you to do so. And from my interpretation of you, it really does come from a place of you want other people to experience what you experienced, and you're trying to benefit the bigger picture, which again is very inspirational. But had it always been that way, and maybe it's not that way, and maybe I'm just sparking thought in your mind, but I'm sure you've thought about this a lot. What percentage of it, or has it always been with that intention, or have you had the intention of, are you really doing so many things just because you don't like saying no, and you just want to get that self fulfillment and gratification from other people through the things you're doing?
Great, great questions and reflections. I definitely think about this stuff a lot. I'll try to answer concisely because you set the bar so high. You said I'm a concise person, but I'll start with, I definitely am a people pleaser in a lot of ways. And at the same time, I also can be really unapologetic in other ways, which is weird. But when I think about kind of my journey in the sport, and I think most people start this way, is very few people don't start as someone who is just curious, sporty, loves games, loves community, and you all come into the sport and you get that bug of playing, you have that really cool play, but then something also clicks. At least for most people that have stayed in the community that are listening to this, they said, wow, this is a pretty small thing and I'm competitive. I could be good at this. And I said that, and that's where I started, and that's where most of us start.
Mm-hmm.
And at a certain point I was like, maybe I should care about other people a little bit, because I developed as a human, through my university years. And not that I was like a terrible person before I went to university.
Yeah, sure.
I hope at least. But I think over time, I definitely got a better appreciation just from non-rounded things about being a good citizen to other people in the world, and not just being about you, and also getting joy from the same way people volunteer in non-rounded spaces. You get the joy of just supporting and doing something that you feel passionately about. I definitely struggle to say no. And I think separate from my maybe people pleasing or tendencies or want to give people and share the experiences that I've had, and also, make an impact and just brighten people's days, I also love to just pick up new projects. I think if you listen to this podcast, I've gone off in so many directions, and sometimes my brain is like, wow, what about this? And so, I if I can, I write down the note, and then I come back to it and think, do I have time to actually pursue this or not? Or should I just be editing, one more round network game for everybody to enjoy instead? Is sometimes the conversations for me. So it's like you said, the on a personal side of things, I don't have it all figured out. And I try to keep learning. But I definitely have learned a lot so far. I've definitely learned a lot through RoundNet, and I've had some really fun experiences just chasing curiosity in this community.
Yep. No, I very much appreciate your response, Ben. I don't have too much to add, other than I appreciate your response, because it was a great response. I'm really happy to I've been able to have you on, and we've talked about a lot of stuff, a lot of value for people. The people listening this far, I'm sure they've enjoyed it. I'm looking forward to more conversations we have about other things, but also obviously more episodes like this on the podcast this year, instead of spending an hour and a half talking about rankings and podcast, sorry, rankings and players and 0.1 percent issues. So no, I really appreciate you coming on, Ben. Thank you for being here.
Thanks for having me, Scott. Yeah, love these conversations. You can have it with me in person, and anyone else is welcome too.
Love that. So on that note, I'm going to end this episode and thank everyone for listening to episode 2, season 3 of That Round It podcast. And say, yeah, enjoy the rest of your day, evening, wherever you're at, whenever, whatever time is for you. And thank you again, Ben, for joining me.